enough about narcissism. Let's talk about me. Actually, let's talk about narcissism in the church with Chuck DeGroat on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
And that's the name of the program. And I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Our favorite megachurch pastor, Zach Van Dyke, is here. Zach just finished 3 weeks of Bible teaching live on social media. Zach, you're the Billy Graham of Instagram. Matthew Borders with us. You should know that Matthew has been a substance abuser. It's cookie dough.
Yes. And I'm married to a dealer, so.
Saul also writes this material, and it affects him. I just want you to know that. Our producer, Jinx, is working hard in his little glass booth. And if anyone asks, he's definitely not selling black market toilet paper on the internet.
No. Masks, yes.
And our video director, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. Every day that John doesn't give him a haircut, he counts as a victory. So.
What?
I don't know.
What? Did you not read this beforehand?
Just leave me alone.
Show prep, well, man. Show prep.
That great.
Prep.
Leave me alone.
Doesn't give himself a haircut.
There you go.
I get it. I just have to work at it a little bit. Dr. George Bingham is president of Key Life, and George says thanks for your donation on Giving Tuesday now. That's every Tuesday. And Kathy White is the soft, feminine side of the program. I don't want to say Kathy is bored, but she did write a full musical starring her salt and pepper shakers.
So oh, I'd Matthew,
she
you
is bored oh. as an electrician in an Amish community.
Matthew, you have got to get back to work.
Yeah.
That was really
that
bad.
That beard is not helping.
You know, like, I think Hamlet, or I think Shakespeare wrote Hamlet during a quarantine, and that's the best we've got.
Really? Seriously, though, guys, when we do get back together, I do have a new cookie recipe I'll bring, and you can eat them around the table. I mean, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
You can bring the dough and give it to Matthew.
You can give it to Matthew. He'll just eat the dough, right?
Yeah, anyway. Enabler.
You know the cool thing about this video thing in our homes?
What?
Is that my microphone is so loud in my earphones that I can't hear your abuse. And it
we'll
works better
and
for me.
Louder.
I like this a lot. By the way, our guest today is Chuck DeGroat. He serves as professor of pastoral care, Christian spirituality at Western Theological Seminary in Holland, Michigan. He's also a co-founder and senior fellow at the Newbegin House of Studies in San Francisco. And in his spare time, Chuck is an author, a speaker, a consultant, a therapist. His latest book, which I now hold in my nicotine-stained fingers, is When Narcissism Comes to Church, Healing Your Community from the Emotional and from Emotional and Spiritual Abuse. Chuck, thanks for taking some time to be with us.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks, Prof. It's been a little while. I mean, every time I come here, man, I think back. Now it's been 25 years since I took my first class from you.
No.
Wow.
That can't be.
Isn't that amazing?
I bet I looked exactly the same then as I do now.
Yeah, you still have the same shtick, you know, but it works.
That would be a compliment for some people. For me, it just means I've always looked this ugly and this old, and it just doesn't change much. Chuck, this is kind of an N-word, narcissism, until fairly recently. You didn't hear it all the time, but you hear it all the time now. And it's a lot different than what of us, than most of us think. As I've read your book, and by the way, you got to get this book because we're not going to be able to cover some of the details that you'll find there. There is so much information, and it's so good, and it's so right on. But kind of keeping the fodder down low, Chuck, talk to us about narcissism. What is it?
Well, one of the things I say at the outset is we have a caricature. We have someone that we think about. It's usually a politician or an athlete or some prominent profile, someone that likes the stage. And one of the things that I hope to do in the book is complicate it a little bit to say that narcissism is not a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. We think about like the typical grandiosity, attention-seeking, that need for power, lack of empathy, things like that. But what I try to tease out in this is that it comes in, and maybe we'll get to this at some point, it comes in 9 different faces or 9 different packages, you know? And so it may not just be that attention-seeking mega church pastor. They get all, you know, they're, I know. I'm sorry, Zach.
Come on, man. All right. We are 2 minutes into the interview and you already threw me under the bus, man.
Already. Not you, Zach. This is not about you. There's a target, you know, there's a target of the mega church pastor. But as I've seen it in a variety of different contexts, it could be the small church pastor, in rural Iowa, you know, with a congregation of 60 people. And so narcissism is more complicated than we like to think.
Do you, I would be interested in, you know, we have strong leaders in the church, some that are charismatic, some that are fairly opinionated. That might be a sign of leadership. You're not suggesting there are going to be some ameliorating factors, but you're not suggesting that leaders not lead.
No, not at all. And the interesting thing about this is that I've done assessments now for over 15 years, and I'll find that there will be really healthy leaders that manifest all those great qualities. They're influential and inspiring and confident. And they may have, as I'll talk about sometimes, narcissistic traits, but not be narcissistic personality disorder. In other words, there's healthy confidence. There are healthy leadership attributes that we see on display all the time. But when we talk about narcissism, we've got to put it on a scale, a spectrum. And when you dial it up to narcissistic personality disorder, that's when we see it become a toxic, manipulative, self-centered way of relating. And so, yeah, it doesn't implicate people with really great leadership gifts. And in fact, some of the folks that I know who've reached out to me, it's funny, you write a book like this and then people start emailing you. And texting. Am I a narcissist? Do you know me? Well, and I've seen such great curiosity from beautiful leaders of large churches who have influence and yet really manifest a kind of basic humility that we long to see in our leaders. Yeah.
That's the, you know, and you've probably heard me say, I've said a lot to preaching classes that, that ego is something you struggle with your whole life. I mean, you're in front of people all the time. They give you a microphone and shine a spotlight on you. And if you're not aware of it, and if you don't repent of it, you have some spiritual problems. Yeah. But if you don't have any of it, you're going to be a very poor preacher. So it's a hard line to walk sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you if you've got a narcissistic leader or pastor who has garnered power to himself or herself, I'm assuming they're narcissistic women too. What do you do? Just leave? I mean, if they've got the power, and what if you're working for them? Make an obscene gesture and walk out, or do you just, are there ways, do you put something in their drink?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
allegedly,
get softer or what?
Yeah, I like that. Put something in their drink. I should have
allegedly.
Pastor Cosby.
Yeah, I mean,
you probably sell that if you can find it.
It's a complicated question because I think the tendency is to want to blow things up, right? And to say, hey, this person is narcissistic. But what I've learned over the years is the first thing that you can do, and maybe we can talk about this on the other side of the break, is to address yourself. You know, it's so easy to scapegoat. And I've been a really good scapegoater over the years myself. But we first address ourselves, what's going on inside of us before we get to what might be going on inside someone yeah. else. And so it takes immense humility, actually, to do the work of dealing with narcissism in others.
Hey, listen, on the other side of the break, I'd like to pursue that a little bit more because out of a genuine curiosity, but it has more existential import to it than just that. I mean, there are people that are watching or listening right now who are in very, very difficult situations. And I think maybe we can provide them some help. And then, George, maybe they'll send a generous contribution to Key Lime.
Only if they really like themselves.
We're out of here, guys. This is very hard work, and we need to take periodic rest and make a buck, too. We shall return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have 4 mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These 4 mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, you're listening to Steve Brown, Etc., and we're so glad you're here. Our guest is my friend Chuck DeGroat. You can check out more from him at chuckdegroat.net. Or you can follow Chuck on Twitter at Chuck DeGroat. Chuck, just before the break, I threw a question at you, and I'd like for you to pursue that. Somebody who's in a situation where somebody who has the power for whom they work and collect their paycheck is a narcissist. What's the next step?
Yeah, I think it always begins with you doing your own work. And I think that requires you to get with someone who knows a little something about these kinds of things. You know, I think a therapist or someone where you can, as they say, when you get on the plane, put the oxygen on your face first. Mm. Because I think when we've been hurt by someone who might be narcissistic, there's often a kind of reactive tendency, right? We want to fight back. We want to punch back or something like that. Maybe we just want to hide. And so to sit with someone and to say, so what's going on inside of me? How am I experiencing this? It's really easy to diagnose narcissism. Oh, yeah, he's narcissistic. But maybe there's something else going on inside of me that I need to be aware of or pay attention to as well that is a part of this dynamic. Because I think we're all implicated. As I talk about in the book, we live in interconnected narcissistic systems. And so for me to show up at a church led by a narcissist, well, that actually maybe says something about me and what I need or what I'm looking for.
Yeah. We interviewed Brant Hansen not too long ago, and his book, The Truth About Us, covers some of the same themes, albeit in a very different way. but with some of the same insights about self-righteousness and the importance of doing your own work before you do anything else. It's why he was saying to his wife, yeah, but Jesus got a whip and went into the temple.
Yeah.
And she said to him, sweetheart, you're the money changers. Once you see that, then you can begin to move.
That's right. And I tell people, you got to know a little something about narcissism to write a book on it. I was a pretty arrogant seminary student. And then I was armed with knowledge in a counseling program with all sorts of categories to diagnose with people with, right? So she's a borderline, he's an addict, and she's a narcissist. And so it requires you to do some work on your own life to actually engage this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The depth people are wrong about a lot of things, the Freudians. But that year of therapy, personal, is not a bad idea.
No.
Yeah, I that was so good. I was in therapy for a while, and my counselor eventually said to me that I probably am working for a narcissist, and that I'll look back whenever I decide to leave and wish I had done it a year earlier. But it took a whole year of me like going through therapy and working through my own stuff that really helped me get to a place where I could leave in a way that was honoring and healthy for me. So that was really good advice, Chuck. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I am curious though, I haven't been a pastor. I was a youth pastor. So they didn't let me around adults for a long time, but since I've been an adult pastor, for the last 7 or so years, I feel like in the last few years, more and more people are coming into my office, with problems and diagnosing either their boss or their spouse as a narcissist. And I'm just wondering, is that a new trend that that everyone's talking about this, or have people been talking about this for a long time? And, and why are people kind of jumping to that pretty quickly?
Yeah, I mean, it might be newer in the church. I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time. You think about Christopher Lash's work going back all the way to the late 70s on the culture of narcissism and how we swim in, you know, in the United States, we swim in the waters of narcissism. You know, I was sort of armed, I often say armed with this language in my late 20s, which is dangerous. You know, you give a late 20 something all sorts of categories to diagnose people with. And so I've been using this language and doing this kind of work for a long time myself. And what I've noticed is that these are not readily accessible categories that we use in the church. When we talk about abuse, spiritual abuse, emotional abuse, it's growing. I think now in the last probably 3, 4, 5 years in the evangelical church, where we've seen just kind of massive personalities fall from grace. And we're beginning to put words around the kinds of systems and personalities that we see there. And by the way, I don't name names in this book. I don't think that serves us very well. But we see some of those dynamics and some of these big stories that we've heard about. I think now we're actually beginning to put words around particular realities that we're facing in the evangelical church. You know, we've got to talk about our own family. It's easy to pick on the Roman Catholics or this denomination or that. But in our world, in our family, we're beginning to name these things.
Yes, it's a good thing, isn't it?
I think so. I think it's a hopeful thing. But I also want to caution us, because we use words like this fairly easily and readily, right? And sometimes in ways that lack nuance or emotional intelligence or wisdom, just plain old wisdom, you know? And it's just really easy to scapegoat and diagnose other people. And so let's be humble, let's be wise and cautious.
Narcissism is a very pejorative word. And so when you're angry at somebody, it's a good one to grab to express your anger. Yeah. I've been there and I've done that, so I know. And I've repented, so don't say anything. Okay.
And it doesn't express like our deepest self in Christ, right? Like it's a label. It says something about a particular dynamic. And so I might call myself an addict or a bipolar or depressed, but that doesn't say what is most deep about me, that I'm a beloved son, I'm a beloved daughter, you know? And so oftentimes people use these labels to dismiss others, right? So they're wicked, they're terrible. And I want to say, well, wait a second. There's always beauty underneath the brokenness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Matthew?
So you have hope for narcissists. I've heard that it's very hard for a narcissist to ever kind of change.
So that's a more complicated question, maybe one that we want to tackle after the break. But but the short answer is, and let me just put this on the table. When we talk about narcissism, we got to remember the spectrum. We've got to remember that, I'll be a little technical for a moment. So hang on. Narcissistic type, style, and disorder. And a lot of us have narcissistic traits that might make us a kind of a type. When you get into style, it's a little bit more problematic. But when you get into disorder, that's when we say, wow, it's really tough to change at that point.
That's when you go to a therapist, and the therapist will charge you big bucks to fix you. You're hustling. I can tell, Chuck. I can see it in your eyes.
It's not just the book.
Our guest is Chuck DeGrode, and you got to get this book because it will get rid of a lot of nonsense about narcissism, and you'll be able to see it in yourself and others. The title is When Narcissism Comes to Church, Healing Your Community from Emotional and Spiritual Abuse. You don't want to miss a bit of this, so don't go away.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Listening to Steve Brown, et cetera, and we are glad you are. Our guest is Chuck DeGrode. And by the way, if you didn't know, we have a YouTube channel. It's not half bad. You can go to youtube.com/KeyLifeNetwork, or you can go to keylife.org and watch these videos also.
Awesome. Chuck, yeah, before the break, we were kind of talking about the problem with these things. It feels like there's not just somebody who has a narcissistic personality, but there's a system around that. And to borrow from the name of a Metallica album, it feels like the whole thing is hardwired to self-destruct. Yeah. Certain events, certain cultures are in motion, and it's going to tend towards cratering and blowing everybody up. But I imagine you must have seen some times where healing does take place. I was curious, are there any common threads to when this situation is diffused and there is healing?
Yeah.
What's the entry point?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I'm thinking of one particular story. By the way, when I tell stories, I try to conflate them a little bit so that you can't figure out which one I'm talking about. Church that was around like 20, 25 years, and the senior pastor is probably diagnosably narcissistic and had to leave. And it was sort of like, even with him gone, it was still there. You know, there was this sense of manifest destiny. Like, we're the only church that should grow because we're God's anointed and blessed, and we should be the church for the neighborhood and for the world. When I came in and started doing work with this church, it was like, well, so we got rid of the pastor. That was the problem, right? And I think oftentimes, I like the work of Peter Senge on leadership. George might be familiar with him, but Senge talks about organizations as icebergs, and you've got to get below the waterline to start dealing with patterns over time, with particular structures and mental models, even underneath that. And that's really, in my work, that's often what churches and organizations avoid. They don't want to deal. They want to talk about like, oh yeah, we had a bad pastor. He was a bad egg, so we got rid of him. But they don't want to sort of go underneath the waterline and say, So what about like how we've been together for the last 20 years is implicated in this, or how we believe, or how our doctrine is shaped in a particular way. I mean, I was working with a really small church in a rural Midwest state that was like, their narcissism was more around like, we have the right doctrine and we are the true church and no other church. I mean, it was a church of like 60 people, but the church held this. It wasn't the pastor. It was like the people who are like, we're the only true church with the right doctrine. So whole systems can hold this kind of stuff.
And then recovering from that, I mean, what's the potential for?
Yeah, this is, you know, it's sometimes easier to do the work with an individual than it is with a system, because now you're asking like the church to actually go beneath the waterline and to take a good hard look at like past problems and patterns, to take a look at structures. This is really hard when I go into like non-denominational networks and they've got just like no structure, you know, and you're just trying to reshape it in ways that are more healthy and more accountable. And then to ask them to actually look at like implicit beliefs or biases or what do we believe about each other? What do we believe about our church? What do we believe about women? What do we believe about abuse? It's much, much harder when you get into a system. They'd much rather kind of deal with a one-off. This was the problem. We fixed it. Now let's move on, rather than like the core group of leaders actually interrogating themselves and asking really hard questions of themselves.
And you talk about that in the book on the leader level of like, they will approximate vulnerability to go, yes, I had this problem. Yeah. When you say it past tense, you're actually not owning it in the way that you should. Just like those churches are not really fully owning it. You're like, just give me a checkbox and let's check it and let's move on. And the problem still remains unresolved.
I feel like that's so important, particularly in the church, because you have a lot of narcissistic leaders who will say, I blew it. I screwed up. I'm a sinner. We're all sinners. And they'll talk in very general terms. And I call that vulnerability, F-A-U-X, most vulnerability. Vulnerability is in the present moment. It's like, let's talk about how I hurt you today. You know, let's talk specifically about the ways in which that impacted you and affected you. And I think, and listen, we're all prone to this. I notice sometimes when my wife and I are struggling around something, I just want to be like, yeah, of course, I know these things about myself. And that's not really that helpful, you know? It's more like, I know, yeah, I realized that I hurt you in that specific way last night, and I'm sorry.
I imagine as a consultant, you're about as welcome in some places as a wet, shaggy dog at the Miss America pageant. You're going to go into the enabling and the codependency and the part that the followers played with the leader. And that has got to not be welcomed by a lot of people in the church.
Yeah. Fortunately, Steve, since we knew each other back 25 years ago, I'm growing up a little bit. So I'm a little more weak, a little less rough around
the edges. Yeah, I bet. Yeah. That comes with a white beard. I just want you to know that, Chuck. And that's in the Bible. Guys, we're talking to Chuck DeGrode, and this is a book that you might want to get and discuss in small groups in your church. You won't have any problem with finding some subjects to discuss as a group when narcissism comes to church. And I would recommend this book to you highly. It's time that somebody said it. Dr. Chuck DeGrode did, and well. Like Jesus, we're coming back. He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Talking with Dr. Chet DeGroat, and we're talking about an uncomfortable subject, but a very important one. I think sometimes that the solution to narcissism is so much fixing it as calling it, being open about it, and saying, "You guys got to help me. I can't do this. I'm hurting people deeply and profoundly." And that's the thing that you rarely see in the church. But you got to get this book. When Narcissism Comes to the Church, it'll make you think, it'll convict you, and it'll teach you how to get your pastor. Kathy?
Oh, that wasn't what you meant to say, was it? Gee whiz.
No.
Chuck, I'd like to head back into the church for a minute. And zero in a little bit on leadership. When leaders are elected by a congregation, hopefully the congregation has been taught, and these potential leaders have been challenged with biblical authority. You know, this is what the Bible says about this particular position, whatever it is that we're going to put your name out there, you know, for that position. So that comes with a certain amount of recognition that this person has, some spiritual qualities that, and then you go from there and you get kind of off, you get kind of off center. Wow, this is, this is somebody who really loves Jesus a lot, probably loves Jesus more than I do. And that's why they're going to be an officer, and on and on and on and on. And it keeps going. And if it's a situation where they serve in that capacity for very, very long period of time, as opposed to somewhere they rotate on and off and that kind of thing, it seems to me like it puts people in a position where 20 years, 15 years or whatever down the road, they've almost become in some ways different people than what they were when they started, because, are they starting to believe their own PR or what exactly, and where do you go with that when it's repetitive of what we've already said, because you want to be supportive and et cetera. And is there something in me that gravitates toward what's becoming this view of like, we're the ones, and so you do what we say, and the narcissism thing just gets very slowly, but it just weaves its way in.
It grows, right? So yeah. I mean, I think back, the first part of what you're talking about, I think back to, and Steve was around for this, when I was ordained back in the day, they did about 10 minutes on character and about 6 hours on doctrine for me. So, that's unfortunate. You see that in different places and contexts and denominations, where we really don't pay as much attention to those kinds of things. But then, you put a person in front of a congregation, and there's this psychological dynamic called the mirror-hungry leader, where the leader needs a mirror. The mirror is the congregation. Approve of me. Encourage me. Say nice things about me. And then the ideal-hungry follower, and the ideal-hungry follower is the person who says, I don't want to know the skeletons in your closet. I just want to know that you're great, that you walk on air, And that dynamic over time, I think you're right on, Kathy. I've seen that over 5, 10, 15, 20 years, where someone who I mean, I know someone personally who was fairly humble in doing their work early on, but over the course of years kind of became grandiose and started to believe his own press and got lost. And that's what I like to say. I don't think God ever lost him, but I think he just got lost, you know, in his own ego. And so 20 years in, then it's sort of like I'm believing my own press. And then other people want to say, like, I can't imagine that he's capable of doing things, or she's capable of doing the kinds of things that I've heard that he or she has done. And that's where it gets really dangerous. Like, I don't want to believe that, you know, that you're capable of disappointing me or sinning in that way. And this is where, you know, Steve's work over the years and your work, Kathy, over the years has been so important in just saying, hey, listen, let's get back to who we are and how broken we are and be honest about ourselves.
Well, and you know, the other thing that happens with that too is that as the person who thinks that they're seeing, you know, this kind of thing, then the self-righteousness and the narcissism, like, well, you know, I just want to be here. I just want to help. I want to do this, you know, and like, and with that crazy thought, like, well, you know, I could fix this.
Yeah.
You know, like what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Everywhere.
It is. And it's, you know, I've had the privilege of being in those, some of those hard, I'm sure some of you have been in these conversations too, when they break, you know, and they, when you just see the person who was up on the stage and so grandiose and they break and it's like, who have I become? I can't believe how entitled I was. I actually thought that I deserved that. I think that I was preaching on our brokenness, but I actually thought that I was owed something far greater than that, you know? And so we're self-deceptive people and we're all prone to this. I mean, there's so none of us should be under any illusion that we're incapable of this. I do think it is pretty qualitatively different when we talk about narcissistic personality disorder, because this is just something that, like, over time has become so ingrained that this is the only person, you know, the person on stage, you know. But I have hope. I have empathy because I've seen the men and women off stage when, you know, in tears and brokenness saying, I can't believe the harm I've inflicted, the debris field that I've caused.
Hey, Chuck.
Yeah.
In the last minute here, because we've got leaders from churches and me in business. Can you give us the signs we as on our own side should be watching for to make sure that we're not evolving into that situation?
Yeah.
Like daily checks or weekly checks, just say, hey, have you done it this way? Or is there something that we should be always on the lookout for to make sure that we are not sliding down that slope?
I think that's great. I think it's for pastors. It's for leaders of all kinds. It's about cultivating humility in the moment, you know, not humility as some sort of grand characteristic that, but like an actual humility that allows you to ask people who work for you, for instance, how do you experience me? And actually want to hear what they have to say. And so it's one of the practices that I've employed and both in ministry and now as a prof is my students now have every right to come to me and say, hey, Chuck, this is how I'm experiencing you. Someone did it actually a few months ago, said, you've just been distant lately. And I feel like I try to get connected to you and you walk away. And I love that. But boy, it's hard because you've got to face yourself. You know, right. When someone comes to you and says, hey, you've been kind of arrogant. You pushed me away. I've experienced these. Those are hard things. So cultivating humility, cultivating curiosity is important.
You know, so when somebody who works for you comes and says, everybody says you're a jerk, that's a good sign that maybe you need to get Chuck's book. The name of it, When Narcissism Comes to the Church. Chuck, you're great, and thank you so much for taking time from a busy schedule to be with us.
Thanks, Brock.
Guys, we're going to come back. Some of you rather we wouldn't, but we're going to tell you who we're going to do it unto next week. It will be somebody brilliant and famous.
Like Chuck.
Like Chuck. And don't go away.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
You spent most of the last hour listening to Steve Brown, etc., and you always have a place at our table. Kind of uncomfortable subject. You ought to get when narcissism comes to church. And at the same time, a couple of weeks ago, we had Brant Hansen on, and that was so good. And these guys come at different ways to this particular subject. But they're both talking about the same thing. It's called sin, and they're against it. But in particular, it's self-righteousness. And it's making it all about me and my goodness. I wish we'd had time to go into it with Chuck, but in this book, he has a lot of stuff about shame and guilt and anger and where that comes from and the part that plays in narcissism or self-righteousness. And it really does. Sometimes the biggest narcissist on the face of the earth needs somebody to hug him or her and to say, by the way, you're loved and you're forgiven. Deal with it. And once you do, I'll be able to deal with you. And you get that from Jesus and secondarily from the rest of us on occasion. Still, I'm not going to ask you guys what you think of me. I'm not that secure yet. But when I do, you'll know that I'm close to entire sanctification. Kathy, who's going to be on next week?
Well, here's the bad news. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Did you know that?
No, really?
Yeah, and so we stopped all of our mail, at the office and UPS and FedEx and all these wonderful books that come for to be reviewed and everything have stopped for like the last 5 or 6 weeks. And so there's absolutely nothing on my desk to review.
Okay. Next week, we're going to have a hymn sing, right?
So I'm going to, wait, today's only Tuesday. I got 3.5 more days this week to come up with something incredibly brilliant. Otherwise, I'm going to go to Matthew and cry and say, do something.
He'll think of a subject.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And listen, guys, we do all right. We kind of like each other.
Yeah, we do. We do okay.
Scintillating and profound, because we are.
Scintillating might be a stretch.
Steve can just write another book.
There you go.
Just write a mini book real quick.
Yeah.
Guys, it's time to go. Say goodbye.
Bye.
And we hope you'll join us next week. Same time, same place. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't do. And of course, that gives you a wide, wide berth.